kwakuwankwamnyako nauvuku naundukufu atamilele.
Broadcasting from high above the reserve, this is Radio Harambe. Jambo, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Radio Harambe, brought to you by JamboEveryone.com. Today, we will discuss the news from Disney's Animal Kingdom, Walt Disney World, and also a little wildlife conservation. Later in the show, we'll tell you everything you need to know about touring the Animal Kingdom during the holidays. I am Dave McBride, broadcasting from the Radio Harambe studios, a full 1,998 feet above the savannah, and joining me from somewhere in the world, a man who only seems to emerge from the jungle just in time to make guest appearances on other podcasts, it's Safari Mike. Mike, how are you?
Jumbo Dave, how are you?
I'm good. Where are you? Since you're only on this podcast, you must be out in the jungle somewhere, someplace.
Very good. I'm in the jungle. I'm in the jungles of Venezuela. And now I know you know where Venezuela is.
I do know where Venezuela is, yes.
But do you know what a Hoatzin is?
A Hoatzin.
Is it a mammal, bird, or reptile?
It's a fish. It's not a fish. It's not a fish.
Wrong.
No, I don't know.
It's a bird.
Could be.
It looks a lot like Archaeopteryx. Do you know what an Archaeopteryx is?
That sounds like something in Jurassic Park.
It's very good. It's a primitive bird that they found fossils of, and they think it's one of the first feathered animals out there. Hoatzin, I should say, are found in the jungles of Venezuela and the Amazon. They're very, very primitive looking. In fact,
really,
they're the only birds that actually have claws. When eggs are hatched, the little hatchlings have basically claws at the end of their wings. That's so when the parents run away from some predator and the baby birds, they instinctively know just to drop in the water and swim for it. And when they get to the banks, they use those claws to claw themselves out of the water and back into a tree somewhere in safety. So they are the only bird that has that.
Wow. How many of them are there?
They're not endangered, actually. They are of least concern. I'm not exactly sure how many there are, but they are not endangered. But they are a fascinating bird. They're so primitive looking and primitive in itself. And they're also taxonomically, if that's a word, difficult to... The current theory is that they are related to doves. But they have been placed with pheasants, with all sorts of birds in the past. But currently, the theory is that they're most closely related to the doves.
Very cool. I got to look these things up if I can only figure out how to spell it. So let's so let's begin with the local news. That's news from Disney's Animal Kingdom. And we're going to start off with something I found on two websites this past week, which claim to have seen more blueprints of Avatar, specifically of the e-ticket attraction coming to the new Avatar area at Disney's Animal Kingdom. The two websites, I'll name them, Theme Park Insider and Yahoo Movies UK, they're the ones that I saw. They're the only two that I found in my very primitive and quick search through the internet for this. They're both reports are practically identical. However, neither of them, and nor could I find it anywhere, actually published the blueprints themselves. So the claim is that these folks saw these, and what they get out of it is, well, I'll read a few of them off. First is, the area itself is going to be called World of Pandora, which I think we were all kind of guessing at anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised they just don't call it plain old Pandora, but
yeah. Yeah, I agree. That's what I assumed it would have been called, just Pandora, but okay. The e-ticket building itself, which we've seen some concept model work on, now we kind of have confirmation, is going to be a huge building, 4 to 5 stories tall, which is big for a Disney ride building. Mm-hmm. It's somewhere between, each report used the phrase 4 to 5 stories tall, upwards of 80 feet. Inside, there's going to be 4 theaters with 3 ride levels in each theater. 2 of those theaters are going to be ADA, that's American Disabilities Act, compliant. There will be 3D glasses involved. There's a pre-show area. No, and let me stop right there and just say this, that all of that, Mike, sounds like Soren.
Yep.
But both of these articles, because it sounds like they have the same source, compare it more to the Simpsons ride at Universal. I've never been there. I don't know what it is. But for those who have, apparently that's a better comparison than Soren.
Right. Yeah. Basically, it's a motion simulator, you know, a lot of different cars, for lack of a better term, with an open kind of look. It's kind of like a cross between Star Tours and Soarin'.
Right. So, yeah. So that's the first thing that came to my mind. You're not going to have a simulator vehicle like you remember in Star Tours, the other simulators they have. Even though Star Tours is 3D, you're going to have more of an IMAX feel to it.
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the cars that you're in don't move like Star Tours. It just means that they will not be enclosed.
That's what I mean. Yep.
Yeah, they'll be open to the IMAX theater. The thing that I found most interesting is that based upon that description, it appears that essentially each theater is its own self-contained ride, almost right. Like Star Tours, where each hangar bay was its own ride or whatever.
Right.
I mean, early rumors, or in the early blueprints they had before, compared this potential Pandora ride to like Soarin' meets Carousel Progress. In other words, the theater attractions would move along in the circle to each different theater. That obviously, I guess, is not the case.
Yes, that seems to be true. Also, another thing with Soarin' was, as far as a comparison to Soarin', it's a description that they gave, which was... it's kind of elaborate to go through, but if you read either of the articles, you'll see what I mean. In Soarin', you have two separate theaters, right? And basically everybody enters into the same theater pretty much from the same place. But it looks like here, just a couple of different doors, but everybody kind of enters from the same area. It looks like here there's going to be sort of an elaborate network of stairs going up and down to different levels of the theater. So I'm not so sure the theaters themselves are going to be as big as they are in Soarin', as far as capacity is concerned. It sounds like they may, and again, it's a little more elaborate with where you go to these things. However, they do all exit in the same spot, and they seem to go out of their way to make sure everybody exits in the same spot. So we all know what that's for.
Yeah. Exactly.
There's no specifics on the ride vehicles as well, but it's the article does say there's some hint in the blueprints that these, whatever vehicle it is going to be suspended from the ceiling.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's again, it's another one of those things. It's just kind of like a little nugget of information. You know, this is going to be a cool ride. You know, one of the articles went so far as to say this is going to be like one of the groundbreaking rides in theme park history. You know, that kind of thing.
I hope so.
Yeah. So they're really going for it here on this one.
And it's going to be tall. It's going to be high up.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like what they do with the Animal Kingdom, it seems. I mean, Everest is visible from all over the park, essentially. The Tree of Life is, obviously.
Right.
And now I guess this floating mountain will be as well.
Yep. Let's not discuss that. Next.
Yes.
It appears, here's another little bit of a rumor, WDWMagic.com, who we seem to always be referencing, is back with more rumors concerning closures at the Animal Kingdom. We know from an official Disney announcement, Festival of the Lion King will close on January 5th and remain closed until July. And just a little update from the last time we mentioned this, I did in fact receive my Mickey monitor, and it does in fact say that in there. It came about a week later than it seemed everybody else was getting theirs, but I did eventually get one. Now, according to this rumor, all of Camp Mini Mickey may close on that date, with character meet and greets being shuffled around to other locations, which we've talked about. Mike, this doesn't seem like a hard rumor to believe. The only weird thing about it is, why would Disney announce a closure of the festival and not a closure of the entire camp? What I mean? That seems to be a little incongruent.
Yeah, why wouldn't they just announce the whole closure of the land? I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. That is true. And there's no real reason to tell. There's no real reason not to say it that I could think of off the top of my head.
Not at this point. Yep, not at this point.
I mean, what are you protecting?
Exactly.
There's nobody out there who, there's nobody who's booking a trip in February who's thinking to themselves, well, I don't care if they close Festival of the Lion King, but oh my God, I can't meet Baloo.
Right. Which they're going to move around anyway. I mean,
they're going to move it all around anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Those characters can move to other places. You would think that if they were closing the festival, now, but keeping the camp open for crowd flow purposes through Christmas, I would understand that. But January 5th? I mean, the camp's going to have to eventually close.
Yeah. Yeah, and all the Christmas stuff that we'll get to later at the camp will be, that's about the time it goes.
Be gone
anyway.
By then. Yep.
Yeah, in fact, it'll probably just, assuming it closes on January 5th, they probably won't, you won't see a normal Camp Mini Mickey for a day before they close it. They'll just, leave the goofy thing going on until January 5th, and that'll be the end of it. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, we should get some more info on that soon. If it is actually going to happen, they would probably announce that closure and those movements in the next couple of weeks. Another thing we kind of touched on last week, and Mike, I'm going to throw this over to you, is, and we've been talking about this forever, is potential changes to the offerings at the park's counter service locations. But it seems now we have some specifics, and we reported on this last week on the blog at jomboeveryone.com. But I thought maybe we'd want to touch on it again quickly, because I know that this is a source of much...
angst.
I was gonna look for a nicer word, but sure, source of much angst in your reporting here. So sure. I know, let's start with the big one, which it seems that the Tamu refreshments menu has completely changed.
Yep, completely did change. And we knew this is, to be fair, I've known this was happening for a good 3 or 4 weeks,
right?
Sources have told me, and they actually told me exactly what the menu turned out to be. It's really geared towards Festival of the Lion King. Now, why they had to make the switch so fast, I guess maybe with the holiday season or whatnot. But it's geared towards the fact that once the Festival of the Lion King opens in Harambe and you get, hundreds of people roaming around right after the show looking for a bite to eat, what they had at the Tamu Tamu was not built to withstand that. The Tamu Tamu, when it was created, was a ice cream place because the Tusker House was the counter service. When the Tusker House became the sit-down restaurant, they turned Tamu first into a burger joint and then into this kind of small, boutique almost counter service that just had a couple of items, never really got too crowded because it was a little kind of different. Most people went to Flame Tree or Restaurantosaurus, the big, that swallowed up people whole. Right. The hundreds. This was just kind of like a different kind of place, and I loved it. Everything that I had there was terrific, and I guess they're gearing up. They sense that when Festival Lion King closes or opens and people come in droves, they need to serve something quick. And this is sort of like it's basically it's chicken. From what I understand, is there's a chicken curry with rice, basmati rice. There is a vegetable and tofu one as well. And then there's a chicken salad that's served with pita.
Right.
It's basically stuff that's in big vats that you can shovel onto a plate. Three of those, two of these, and just shovel them on there. As opposed to, putting together sandwiches and the pulled beef and the homemade potato chips, which is the real crime, the loss of those.
Yeah.
that's what it is. And from what I understand from the food itself, what I've heard from people is that curry chicken kind of scares some people, but if you've ever had butter chicken, which is very mild type of Indian chicken dish, it's you don't really taste too much curry. That's what this sort of really is. It's very mild, geared towards the masses. It's basically, chicken and rice, basically.
Right, and the other kind of, I guess you would say, semi-decent thing here is that they didn't go to a burger joint.
Correct. That's fair. That's fair. They're still trying to keep it they're still trying to keep it kind of different a little, this is not something you'll find other places. It's not as interesting to me as, what they had before, but I understand at least that they kept it that way.
Yeah.
So you get a vegetable and tofu with rice, you get a chicken, chicken curry with rice and this African chicken salad, which I'm not sure if it's the same chicken salad that they had before, except now instead of being a sandwich, it's served on like some lettuce with pita wedges. That's essentially what it is, from what I understand. Now, that might be fine. I mean, the chicken salad they had there was pretty good, actually.
Right. I mean, it's a shame that this is what's happening there, but at the very least, they still kept a bit of an ethnic flair to it.
Right.
So they haven't caved entirely to the wills of the bean counters when it comes to these kind of things.
And Kusafiri changed one item.
Right.
They removed the flatbread and went with the sausage spinach wrap instead of a flatbread. But the real winner here is if you go over to Dinoland in Trilobites, where we had the apple blossom and the strawberry with waffles. They actually have a new waffle sandwich there, which is a pulled buffalo chicken waffle sandwich, which...
Oh, boy.
I saw a picture of it. Somebody tweeted a picture of it to me, and they said it was not quite as good as the Sleepy Hollow ones. I don't know if you've ever had the Sleepy Hollow ones.
I have.
But they're amazing. The chicken one is amazing.
It was good.
They said this is... No, it's better than good. It was amazing.
Please. Go ahead.
It's not quite as good as that, but it was pretty good. And it looks like... They basically said you need to really like buffalo sauce and blue cheese because there's a lot of that.
Well, you know, but it's new, so maybe things will tweak. Yeah. And none of us know why the waffle sandwiches were taken away from Sleepy Hollow. They seem to be doing well enough.
They weren't taken away.
Oh, I thought some of them were. I thought they changed them around and.
No. You know what? What we discussed before is for whatever reason, I can't figure this out. They're very popular. People love them, but they stopped serving them at 4:00.
Oh, that's okay.
And I can't for the life of me understand why they do
so
that.
So you can't get them for dinner is what it was.
Right. And I would. I mean, to me, that's the best counter service meal you're going to get at Disney World is that chicken, that sweet and spicy chicken waffle sandwich.
Yeah.
Served it at 6:00 at night. Come on. Come on.
Well, maybe they'll add some of those over to Trilobites now. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, they had started serving the waffle thing with the strawberries for like a dessert kind of thing. And I had the apple blossom there, which was terrific. So, yeah, maybe they'll serve a couple of them.
Why do you think the change to the Kusafiri thing? Because of breakfast? Because of...
Yeah, who knows? I mean, they switch those things around every once in a while. I don't know if a wrap is easier than flatbread or cheaper. Or who the heck knows?
Okay.
But I think it's just a switch of some type. They just, you know, every once in a while, you know, these counter services will just change things up. And I applaud that. I have no problem.
Sure. No, I love that. I love that.
And I had the flatbread. I mean, it was fine, but it wasn't like, oh, you know, it wasn't, you know, one of the best things on earth. So, you know, whatever. I'll try it.
Right. I am not one of these people, Mike, who needs to eat, who I can go to a vacation to Disney. And never once will it approach my mind that I must eat something from somewhere in order for my trip to be full, fulfilled. There's nothing in Disney that makes me go, oh my God, this is the craziestly greatest thing in the world. So and that's true with the Animal Kingdom too, for the most part, usually only desserts are what gets me. So when they have these like little sandwich things, I love the fact that they rotate them. I know a lot of people get used to stuff and want to see the same stuff over and over again. But when it comes to counter service, like meal options, you know, I love the fact that they change them around. And they always seem to be successful at this park with those changes. So
there are a few things that if they removed, I would be bummed out about. Like if they said the jalapeno cheese pretzels are gone, we're not serving them anymore. I'd be annoyed.
Sure.
I'd be annoyed if they stopped serving the bread service at Sanaa.
Sure.
I would be annoyed if they stopped doing the macadamia pancakes at Kona. Kona. I got the Yankees on my mind.
Right.
And there's a couple of those, you know, like the waffle sandwich at Sleepy Hollow. If they told me tomorrow that they're not serving it anymore, I'd be like, ugh.
Yeah, but that's all. I wouldn't be like, oh my God, I'm never going to enjoy myself again. I'm going to pine away at it. You know, there were a couple of things in the glory days of Disney dining, which have long since passed. They're, you know, we're talking 10 years ago and before, where before the dining plan existed, where there were some great dishes served in some amazing restaurants. But they're all gone. And the only thing left for me really are, you know, stuff that I kind of like. And yeah, I would be very disappointed if I couldn't get one of those cookie or sandwiches with the ice cream or the new one that I just could. I wanted to ask for 40 of them to bring them home was the spice cake.
Oh, yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, I wanted to bring 100 of them home with me.
What was there years ago before the dining plan that was just like so great that that you miss?
There once was a restaurant called Le Cellier. And I don't think it's there anymore. I'm not sure what's there now, but there used to be a restaurant in Canada, of all places, called Le Cellier. And way back then, they used to serve a pork shank.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
That was just a death row meal. I mean, it was just, it was one of the best things I've ever had. I've only ever had it once because then apparently not soon after, Le Cellier is no longer there, or it has been replaced by something that calls itself Le Cellier, but really isn't Le Cellier. So, you know, that's the first example that comes to my mind.
Okay.
There was also other things. There were things at the old Alfredo's. But we're going back 20 years for some of these things.
I want to say something right now.
Yeah.
Well, that'll probably tick off 20 to 25% of our listeners.
Oh, that's nobody. Go ahead.
Here we go. So all five, that's five people, I think.
Right.
Le Cellier was always the most overrated restaurant in Disney World property.
I think Le Cellier became that, but it certainly didn't start that way.
I always thought it was overrated.
Le Cellier, but you got to remember, Le Cellier goes back to the beginning, and it didn't become the in vogue place to eat until what the late 90s, you know, 2000s. It didn't become the in vogue thing, the place to eat until podcasts and websites began.
That's true, and now it's not that big anymore. You don't hear people talking about it like they used to.
Because
it's so expensive.
Because it's terrible. It's gone. It's not Le Cellier. I refuse to call it Le Cellier because I believe there wants to be a great restaurant there that served me one of the five best meals I've ever had, and certainly the best meal I've ever had at Disney. And that meal was probably the last, and Mike, when was that, 2003? That was the last time I went to Disney and had a meal that absolutely blew me away. I
mean, I'm going to say something else that's going to tick off another 15 to 20% of the listeners.
Good.
Canada is easily the worst pavilion in Epcot.
Easily?
Easily the worst. It is the worst. The stores are up on that. You have to like climb a flight of stairs to go to stores.
Well, all the stores are gone. I mean,
They're there.
No, there's only one.
Oh, that's true. There's only one.
There used to be more up on the top.
What dope decided to put stores where you had to go find them? I mean, seriously, what dope did that? And the movie is terrible. The whole pavilion should go. They should replace it with something more interesting.
That pavilion, to me, is the encapsulation of what Disney went through, certainly between the late 90s and until the last, you know, few years where things are starting to pick up, where stuff just got doors just started closing. Things just were changed into stuff that it isn't as good. I mean, listen, I don't have any problem with Martin Short, but nobody looks at that movie now and thinks it's better than the one that was there before.
No, I could fix that place. I could fix it. And you got to put a counter service in there to make some money, because the Canadian Pavilion makes zero money. It doesn't make any money. I don't care what anybody tells you.
Nobody's going in there and buying maple cookies and Toronto Maple Leaf shirts.
Nobody shops there, and nobody's going to shop there. It's
Canada. I shop there.
It's America North. Nobody's going to shop there. And number two, there's no counter service, so there's no way to make a money. I mean, you have to. Are you telling me they can't open up a small counter service restaurant that serves that cheese soup and pretzel bread? They'd be doling in money.
Yeah, I agree.
Last but not least, you build a brew pub overlooking the waterfall. I mean, you got to be kidding. It's a gold mine there.
Listen, you don't have to get me started. Let's not get too far into Epcot here. Well, because we could do this all night, so let's move along.
Move on.
Since we were talking about Harambe way back before we were discussing Epcot, I want to kind of stay there. There's a website called OrlandoParkNews.com. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Mike, I'm sure you have, but some of the listeners may not have seen it. They seem to enjoy reaching their cameras up over construction walls and taking photos and posting them. And they've done this a couple of times for the construction site for the Festival of Lion King Theater. They just released one. Actually, I think it was Thanksgiving. So if you go to their site, you're going to have to go back a few posts. It'll be, late November to see these pictures. And they show some photographs of a massive theater. Obviously, this theater is going to be big. But the couple of things that I wanted to point out was there is a significant waterfront area that they are clearly developing. I mean, they are putting in pylons. They're clearly developing a giant, significant waterfront area. And if you look down at the second photo from over the walls, which on the first page that you click to of the article, because the article's in two pages, and it's probably has 30 photos. If you go down to about the 12th photo, you'll see one picture, and it's not really talked about, but over on the left, Mike, did you see this? There is a building kind of going up along the waterfront. It's this sort of like, it's off on its own. Don't know what it is. But the coolest thing about this is they are clearly developing this waterfront for guests.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I mean, this is what I have to say with this. You know, my sources have told me, and we've talked about this ad nauseum about Harambe, is that, you know, they're building more than just a theater. They're building shopping. You know, from what my source told me is you could expect at least two merchandise things. Now, whether that's
that stores, could be one of them. That building could be one of them.
The one by the waterfront?
Sure.
I don't think so.
Well, it could be.
Number two is counter service restaurant.
Could be that too.
Counter service. Now, I don't know what that means. Does that mean a Yak and Yeti kind of one where there's like a building with counter service? Is it a restaurantosaurus, a big building where people go in and sit? Or is it even just a booth like what you have on between Asia and Africa, like Mr. Kamal's? I don't know. And last but not least, they have told me that there's going to be another sit-down restaurant. And that's, if I had to place money on it, that would be, if they're building a sit-down restaurant,
they'll build it on the water.
On the water, where you can get views of the Rivers of Light Parade a la, the Cantina and a couple of the other places on Epcot for Illuminations. That's what I think it is.
When are they going to release this information? What are they waiting on? I mean, they're shutting things left and right. They got walls up everywhere. The park looks like a mess. If guests at least knew what they were planning as a result, other than we're going to build a new theater for something you've seen before, and Avatar is going to come in when you're old and gray. Why don't they tell people what's going on here?
It puzzles me because they've taken a completely different tact with this than what they did with the Snow White Mine Coaster. Because if you remember, when they decided to build the Mine Coaster and they started putting up the walls, there has always been purposely designed holes in the wall. And they even like set aside, hey, take a peek at what we're doing.
Right.
And, people could look in and see what's going on. And I mean, they embraced that they were building this e-attraction here. I mean, maybe they think, a couple stores and whatever is not going to get anybody really excited. And they've already told you that the Festival of Lion King is going there. So, I mean, I understand that that's a little bit different. But
yeah, but if they talk about developing a waterfront and some more dining, I mean, people would be excited about that. That's
absolutely. I agree.
Okay, next article. The Expedition Everest Challenge is a runners who are looking to register for it. It's a 5K event. It's a 5K run along with the scavenger hunt and that kind of stuff. If you're looking to register, you can start doing so on December 17th at noon. Disney describes the event as a, quote, adrenaline-driven, thrill-packed weekend of a great run and a breathtaking course in Disney's Animal Kingdom Park, and it is at night as well, so that's kind of cool. The family edition has Run Disney Kids races. There's a post party that you have to pay for. Plenty of Disney entertainment and exclusive ride access as part of the post party. Like I said, it combines a scavenger hunt along with the run. You get to go to DAK and go to the Animal Kingdom at night. Go to rundisney.com to learn more information about it. The only thing I'll say is that when I did go to RunDisney.com, they list the Snow Leopard Trust as a beneficiary. They don't say what the beneficiary receives out of this, but we've talked, Mike, a bunch of times about how portions of proceeds from things like the Wild Africa Trek and other things go towards conservation. So maybe that's what's happening here. I don't have any specifics on that. If I get any, I'll report it. But
yeah, I know some of the other races have, you know, as part of the race and part of the fees, they make donations to various things, you know, whether it's children's hospitals or other things. So right. Maybe that's what's going on here. And I know Joe Rohde, you know, Mr. Animal Kingdom, is very involved with that particular organization, the Snow Leopards in general.
Yes.
So maybe that this year they're going to donate to Snow Leopards because of Joe Rohde, but I don't know that for a fact.
That would be cool if that were the case.
Right.
Okay, time for some conservation news. We all know what a copy is, what an okapi is. It's rare. It's not very well known outside of us, of Animal Kingdom fans. But to us, they're stars of the show, so to speak. They can be found at both the theme park. They're at the Animal Kingdom Lodge. They also are hold the unique distinction of being the first animal seen along the Kilimanjaro Safaris Trail. Well, a couple weeks ago, this gorgeous, what they call forest giraffe is sort of the nickname for it, was reclassified as endangered in the newly released International Union of Conservation for Conservation of Nature, IUCN, their red list of threatened species. And while being classified as endangered is not the worst classification on the list, many experts believe that turning the tide on this trend for the okapi may be incredibly difficult, if not near impossible. The okapi is indigenous to the forests of the Democratic Republic of Congo. And even though it's the country's national symbol, the armed conflicts going on there, which we've all read about, have had a predictably catastrophic effect on the wildlife. As a result, the okapi population is plummeting as we speak. And even the sanctuaries are often not safe. I mean, there have been, the press have reported a few instances where they were, you know, where violence erupted even in those areas. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to mention that the okapi was moved there into the endangered list. And, if we can do anything to help them, there is a site called the Okapi Conservation Project. And that's at okapiconservation.org. Maybe you can go there, read up on it, make a donation, whatever you feel is the way to go. But not good news for the okapi.
No, and the problems with the okapi are a couple of things. First of all, there's about 10 to 25,000, I think, in the wild, if my memory serves me. But the two biggest problems they have is the okapi in and of itself is a very difficult. It's limited to a small area. It always has been. Historically speaking, it's not widespread throughout like all of Africa. It was limited to a particular area of the Congo forest.
Which is why it wasn't discovered until the 20th century.
Right. And problem number two is just that the area it's limited to is the Democratic Republic of the Congo, which is seemingly has been in civil war for decades now.
Yeah.
And it's the problem that we've had with the mountain gorillas who are also in the Democratic Republic of Congo. It's almost impossible. Forget. It's almost impossible for people just to get there to study them. Never mind to set up, patrol. And
right.
The country itself is not rich enough to put aside millions of dollars to fund, parks and guards and, studying the animal and stuff.
Right.
But even international people, if they want to go in there to try to do it, it's almost impossible due to the violence that goes on there on a routine basis, unfortunately. Exactly. So until the political situation gets better, it's almost impossible to do anything about it.
Yeah, I mean, all we can do is do our best to kind of help support the people on the ground who literally are putting their lives in danger.
Exactly. I mean, the people who go there and try to protect the okapi or the mountain gorilla and a couple of the other things that are there really do risk their lives, just like Diane Fossey did. You know, she lost her life how many years ago trying to protect it. It was a little bit different of a situation, but not much different.
Okapiconservation.org is the place to go and read about it and do whatever it is you need to do there. Finally, we now have a very, very limited supply of Radio Harambe t-shirts for sale to our listeners. Hold on. We are always looking for new ways to raise some funds in any way we can for our conservation partners. So all of the profits we'll make from these shirts will be donated to those organizations. It's not going to be much, but every little bit helps, especially in the holidays. The shirts are available in large and extra large only. And I'll sell them for $24 with most domestic shipping costs included. And I say that because some people have very expensive shipping costs to certain areas that we call domestic, and you know who you are if you do. But I'll include shipping in most of those things. And like I said, when I say limited, I mean limited. I have maybe a half dozen of these. And you can go to our blog. You can find that on JohnBoEveryone.com. You can also go to BuanaBlog, B-W-A-N-A, .blogspot.com to access the blog specifically. And in the coming days, probably by the time this gets released, there will be a picture, a rendering of some kind on there, either of the design or of the shirt itself, depending on when I take delivery. If you are interested in one of these.
I am.
If you are interested in one of these, email me at safariguide@johnboeveryone.com. That's safariguide@johnboeveryone.com. And just a note, in order to make this happen, you're going to need a PayPal account in order for us to arrange payment. So, again, there's very few of these. If you're interested in one at the sound of my voice, I suggest you. These are first-come, first-served basis. But if they do well, if we sell a few of them, I can certainly get some more made. So, that's the last bit of news. It's kind of my little push in Christmas to sort of raise some money for conservation. So, email me at safariguide@johnboeveryone.com if you're interested in those.
And just t-shirts, huh?
Just t-shirts is all I have right now.
No iPod cases.
No, just t-shirts right now.
No dresses.
No dresses. No.
Use a dress.
All I have is t-shirts. If there's interest in these specific shirts, of which I will have in my possession a half dozen, large and extra large only, then I will sell them. And then if there seems to be a lot of interest, we'll consider expanding the line and getting some more. But I have a few of these. So I just wanted to announce that. And that will do it for our local news. We're going to take a short break, come back with the world news on Radio Harambe. Jennifer Green of Destinations in Florida is the official travel partner of Radio Harambe and JohnBoEveryone.com. Jen can do everything you need done in order to book your next Walt Disney World vacation and have the time of your life. She is an expert in everything Disney and will remove all the stress of booking your trip. And she is as committed to conservation as we are. So every vacation you book, or even every quote you request, means Jen and Destinations in Florida will make a donation to the Jumbo Everyone conservation effort. You can contact Jen directly by emailing her at jennifer.g@destinationsinflorida.com or by calling her directly at 443-424-0181. You can also head over to JohnBoEveryone.com and click the Destinations in Florida icon to get your vacation started. Seriously, what can be better than booking a Disney World vacation while helping to save wildlife? Back to Radio Harambe. Thanks for tuning in. And we are now ready to go to the world news. And with that is Safari Mike. Mike, what you got?
Jumbo. Let's start off with our favorite park, which is the Disney Hollywood Studios.
Stark begins.
And your favorite topic, which is coffee.
Oh, yay!
There are two. We talked about this, I think, when we had Adam on talking about the tea cart, the Joffrey's cart. And we mentioned how Magic Kingdom and Hollywood Studios didn't have any of these Joffrey's carts. Well, that is no longer the case. There are two now opened at Disney's Hollywood Studios. One is by near Toy Story Mania at Pixar Place. And inexplicably, it is not themed at all. And the second one is on the streets of America. And inexplicably, it looks like a Cars Land kind of thing. It's all themed towards like a service station for cars. why they would put the Cars one in the Streets of America and a bland, boring one over by Toy Story Mania in the Pixar. Correct. I believe Cars was a Pixar movie, if my memory serves me correct.
Yes, you are correct.
Why? It just puzzles me. But
because
anyway.
the concept of theme and Disney's Hollywood studios have been divorced from each other for about 15 years. That's why. So
fair enough. So let's move on, shall we?
Yes, please.
Let's move on to the Disney website and store. As you just announced, we're looking at perhaps selling some Radio Harambe t-shirts. Well, we have competition. And it's Disney. Disney is selling between December 4th and December 8th Dreamfinder and Figment holiday shirts. It's very limited, just like the Radio Harambe ones, apparently.
Not as limited, I can promise you that.
Well, they might sell more, but the time frame for which you can buy it is limited. It's only for like a week. As far as I know, this is not limited time magic. However, it kind of goes hand in hand with what we saw a month or so ago when they started doing the Horizons t-shirt where you could buy for a limited time. I guess this is something that Disney's doing now. They're offering a t-shirt that you can only buy within a week, so you better buy it or else you'll never see it again. Kind of pressuring you into buying it.
I love that.
And, you know, the t-shirt itself is actually kind of interesting. It's got Dreamfinder on it. And just like the Horizons one, it's very old school Epcot.
Which is an Epcot thing now.
It is an Epcot thing. Well, see, they know that there is that group of Epcot fans.
Who
think that anything after Horizons was built is worthless. So they kind of cater to that and sell these t-shirts because you know they got to buy them.
Well, but it's between this one and the one they just did of the Horizons one. I mean, are they just trying to get people aggravated? I mean, isn't it better just to not acknowledge these things?
Yeah, because the weird thing is that, I mean, everybody says Imagination is closing in January for a major overhaul.
Exactly.
And if you believe some of the people, it's going to be Phineas and Ferb. I don't particularly subscribe to that theory. Bob Iger did say that Figment's going nowhere. Right. And I'll take him for his word right now. But so I can't imagine they get rid of Figment. It just sells plushes. I just would puzzle me. But they are closing it apparently and overhauling it. They're just aggravating people thinking about the old Dreamfinder,
Park-eyed
Horizons.
Yeah.
The only positive to this is it seems like sooner or later I'm going to be able to buy my Seabase Alpha shirt.
You know what? I never want to encourage. Listen, I don't care what people buy or don't buy. I'm not encouraging you to buy anything that Disney sells. It makes no difference to me. But so I'm never going to endorse these things. But I will, however, go out and buy a Seabase Alpha shirt.
Definitely.
If that comes out.
Radio Harambe and Seabase Alpha. Those are the two shirts I want.
I just want the Seabase Alpha symbol that they had. I don't need anything else. Seabase Alpha.
Yes.
I'm for it.
All right. Next story?
Yeah.
All right. We're moving over to the Magic Kingdom, where the new bus loop is opening. And if you've seen the construction over in front of the Magic Kingdom, they've been building this for a little while now. And they're building another set of bus stations that can accommodate the new expanded buses. I don't know if you've seen these yet, but they're basically double in size of the old buses.
Bendy buses, they call them in London.
What do they call them?
Bendy buses.
Yes, those, because they have that almost like accordion-looking thing in between the two of them.
Yeah.
They're coming to Disney, and they'll be able – this new loop will be able to accommodate them, and the loop itself will contain the moderates, the big moderates, like Port Orleans and Caribbean Beach, as well as the numerous value resorts. That's what's going to be at those loops. The good news for for Disney fans who use public transportation – the bonus to this is the Hollywood Studios and the Animal Kingdom buses that used to drop you off at the Ticket and Transportation Center, which would give you the aggravation of trying to get over from there to the Magic Kingdom, adding 20 minutes to your trip. Well, they're now going to be dropping you off right in front of the Magic Kingdom, which I think is a nice thing.
That's good. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that's fine by me.
Yeah.
No, I use the buses and... I
Mike, I use the buses constantly. You know that. Whenever I go there, I only ever use the buses. I am so used to them now. I no longer have any complaints about them. I am not. The difference is I'm not one of these commando people. I don't need to be in the park when it opens. I don't need to get from one place to the other. I don't need to go to a resort to eat right. or something. Like, I mean, I'm just more kind of laid back. So if you're like that, the buses are great.
Well, I mean, you know, I've always said this too.
But if you're in a hurry, nah.
See, the buses, though, for the Magic Kingdom, or even if I'm at the a resort hotel, whether it's the Animal Kingdom Lodge or whatever, you know, not on the Loop or in the Wilderness Lodge, but somewhere else, and I have a car, I still give serious consideration to taking the buses to the Magic Kingdom because it drops you off in the front.
Sure.
As opposed to the Ticket and Transportation exactly. Center, which is just aggravation.
Exactly.
I mean, I understand the whole nostalgic thing about it, sure. the monorail and all that. I get it. And what Walt was looking to do to keep the parking lot away from, I get all that. But, you know, when you've been there, you know, 35 times, it kind of gets aggravating.
You're over that.
Yeah, I'm over it. I'm over it. So I usually take the buses either way to go to the Magic Kingdom.
Yeah.
And this to get me. You know, if I wanted to go to the studios to the Magic Kingdom, I would have to stop at the TTC. Not anymore, so I like that.
Yeah. All I would say is if you think you're in a hurry to get someplace, don't take the bus. Because they're unpredictable. That's true.
They're unpredictable.
And what can go wrong will go wrong. But but you just, you know, if you're not like that and you're looking to, you know, just kind of relax and not ever have to drive and park and all that kind of stuff, they're great. I mean, they're perfect. And if they can expand the capacity, especially to the Magic Kingdom, where that's the one that's always the worst,
yeah.
you know, especially going to the Magic Kingdom on, you know, on a night of extra magic hours or something like that, and you're heading over there at 4 or 5 o'clock. Yeah, those buses are a disaster. So mm-hmm. if they can expand that, all for it. It's great news.
Alrighty.
Do we have anything else?
Well, one more.
Okay.
Folks who listen to our podcast will probably recall the tirade. I got quite a few comments about it on Twitter, too, about the Stave Church in Norway, closing that to make way for a Frozen kind of exhibit.
You had a meltdown, Mike. Let's be honest.
Fair enough. Anyway, it has reopened. And we have gotten if you go on the Disney Parks blog, as well as some other fan sites and stuff, you'll see what is in store for you at the new exhibit at the Stave Church. And I am going to say it's not bad at all.
Wow.
I have to admit, it's not bad.
Holy
it's not
bad. Schmoly.
It's not the Vikings. I do think I do miss the Vikings, but at the very least, it's the Frozen aspect of it is very subdued. To be honest, there's an exhibit of a mannequin dressed in woman's, you know, authentic, folky Norwegian attire, and they have like a little plaque with Anna from Frozen, and they talk a little bit about what's on the what's there and how it relates to the movie, and they do that with the reindeer exhibit, and they do that. They actually have pictures of, you know, actual places in Norway compared it to like things from Frozen. It's not a bad job at all, actually. And then there's some authentic musical instruments and, you know, other things, you know, in day-to-day life of Norway. The problem I have is that, you know, the Viking culture is so interesting and so original to Norway, sort of unique, I should say, to Norway and Scandinavia, that they really need to emphasize that more, I think. But, you know, it's not a bad exhibit at all.
Good. Well, we're glad to see you've come off the ledge, Mike.
Well, and Frozen is also quite a good movie. I don't know if you got a chance to see it yet, but it was quite good.
No, I haven't seen it. Good. Well, good. So that's it That's it for the world news.
That's it.
Okay, we're going to take a short break again, come back and talk about holidays at the Animal Kingdom. Coming back on Radio Harambe just after this. back to Radio Harambe. I am Dave McBride, coming from the Radio Harambe studios. From somewhere in Venezuela, joining me today is Safari Mike.
Jumbo Dave.
And now, Mike, we're going to, since it's the holiday season and it's going to be right upon us as it, you know, Christmas closes in, yep. I thought we wanted to talk a little bit about, we've got a couple week buffer here before the crowds get insane in Disney World.
They do get insane.
And so we're going to talk a little bit about touring, specifically the Animal Kingdom and the Animal Kingdom Lodge. We're going to mention that as well during the holiday season. And, you know, that not just the week of Christmas, but also the surrounding couple weeks where you can kind of partake in all the holiday things. I figured, Mike, we'd begin at the Animal Kingdom Park.
Okay.
And obviously the glaring thing that sticks out is that the Jungle Parade. At first, let me preface this real quickly and see if you agree. Both the Animal Kingdom Park and the Animal Kingdom Lodge are, well, let me start again. The Animal Kingdom Park is probably the one park that does not use Christmas as a sort of marketing tool where they just kind of hammer you with Christmas everywhere you go with all different kind of items to buy and things to partake in and reasons to spend extra money and all that. It doesn't really happen at the Animal Kingdom. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, that's true. And each of the other parks have at least that one big draw, one big thing, like the what's the word I'm looking for? The party at the Magic Kingdom, plus all the decorations.
Very Merry Christmas Party. Yep.
Right. And then there's the Osborne Family Lights at the Hollywood Studios,
right,
which draws people in like nobody's business. And then Epcot has the Candlelight Processional,
right,
which draws people in like nobody's business. Disney, the Animal Kingdom has nothing like that.
Nothing like that at all. It's very understated. And most of the decorations that go up are very tasteful, often not even, some of them you don't even notice unless you look at them, unless you're, you know, somebody points them out to you. There is a big giant tree in front of the park when you walk in. It's from what I understand, it's pretty much the same one that's always been there.
Yeah, it's very unique too. I mean, unlike the other thing about the Animal Kingdom, unlike some of the other places that has very, what you would typical, I guess, is probably maybe not a fair word, but decorations. The decorations you see on this particular tree are very unique, with the animal print designs and the animal masks and the baskets and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the first thing you see, and then obviously the biggest change is is the Jammin' Jungle Parade gets essentially a holiday layover in the Jingle Jungle Parade. But this is nothing like the very Merry Christmas Parade that you have to spend $75 for. This is very similar to the normal parade, just with some music and some costume changes, correct?
It's exactly what it is. So the parade at the Very Merry Christmas Party is a completely different parade. This one is basically they take the same vehicles and the same stuff, put some wrapping paper on it, put some candy canes on it and some Christmas trees on the, you know, safari jeeps and
right,
and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, new music,
right,
you know, new, nice, you know, I like the music, that's fine. And they have a parade. I mean, but it's the same vehicles, the same costumes, pretty much everything's the same.
Now, Mike, is there anything else that you would say? Go through a couple of the other holiday ones, because I know there are some character things that people might want to be aware of for the holidays.
Well, there's really only one other thing that I can think of, and that is Santa Goofy's Wild Wonderland, which is essentially what they turned Camp Minnie Mickey into. The only other place, I mean, other than the front and the safari and the parade, the only other place that really gets a real makeover is Camp Minnie Mickey. And obviously, this is apparently going to be the last year they do this, so you might want to...
Go see it. Take some pictures for us.
Yeah, they basically decorate everything, and I know in years past that they had Christmas trees out in front of each meet and greet area. So in front of the Pluto meet and greet area, you would have, you know, like dog bones on the tree, dog, you know, water bowls and all that kind of stuff. And Chippendale would have things that, you know, geared towards chipmunks and stuff like that.
Right.
So they have very specific trees for there. And they also make it look like you're supposed to be on the Adirondack. So they make it look like, you know, it snowed a little bit, so like the you know, the light poles might have like snow on it. It's obviously not snow, it's paint.
Sure.
But you know what I mean?
right.
So they make it look a little Christmassy over there as well. And you get to meet Goofy in his Santa costume. He has like a white beard and his red suit. And, you know, you get a cute little picture with the kids with the Santa Goofy.
Now, so nothing else that you can think of that you might want to point out, or should we head over to the lodge quickly?
There really isn't too much else to the Animal Kingdom. That is about it, yeah.
I mean, there's some different music loop things going on. Like I said, some decorations, look around. Most of them are beautiful, very tasteful kind of things. Over at the Animal Kingdom Lodge, however, Jumbo House has probably the most spectacular Christmas tree in all of Disney World, at least to me. Now, I'm biased, I understand.
I would put it on par. Have you ever seen the one at the Wilderness Lodge? I mean,
They are very similar.
While the Jumbo House has very African inspired, and again, similar, you know, very zebra print stuff, cheetah print stuff, and African in items and things like that. In the Wilderness Lodge, it's very Native American with all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
You know, that kind of stuff. But both are very impressive. And obviously, the hotels are very similar. The lobbies are anyway.
Right.
So they have a similar thing going on. But the tree itself is spectacular in the Animal Kingdom Lodge. And even all the garland around the lobby there, because it's a huge lobby and the floor is going above you. Very well decorated and, you know, very nice.
So instead of going, if you're looking to go to a resort to see holiday decorations, everybody always thinks of the same ones. Listen,
Grand Floridian.
Yeah, the Grand Floridian has a gingerbread house where they sell $12 gingerbread that is worth about 3 cents. I mean, it's terrible. And I hate to say that, but don't go over for that. If you want to see the gingerbread house, it's nice, it's cute, that's great. But this is the one that has the real awe factor, the real wow factor for the person coming into the resort on the holidays.
Yeah, and also with it, I know last year they had like a setup where cast members built their own gingerbread houses, and they were kind of Disney themed. I remember seeing a Lilo and Stitch one, a Tarzan Jane's treehouse one. They were kind of cool. They were done by, I mean, they were not professionally done per se, but they were well done. That was a fun thing that the Animal Kingdom Lodge did. The decorations downstairs by the restaurants are really nice as well, so check them out. And of course, you know, a nod to the Disney hipsters, because, you know, they have their YouTube site.
I was going to mention that.
Yes, the Animal Kingdom Lodge
Christmas Loop. Yep.
Which is just amazing. And to be honest, I've listened to it twice today while at work.
It is beautiful. In fact, as you're listening to this, to the Mike and I speaking, you're probably hearing a couple of those songs from off that that loop from the Animal Kingdom Lodge as well. So,
yeah, it's a great, great loop. And that's an example of a nice Christmas music. It's tasteful. It's very well done. And it's themed African style. So it's got a distinct flavor to it.
It's great. It's just great. So I think the biggest thing about really to talk about any park in the holidays is how you have to sort of plan your day here. If you're going to go in Christmas week, you're going in the worst crowd time ever that you could possibly find. So while those of most people are standing on, you know, sitting in traffic waiting to get into the Magic Kingdom or wanting to go see, you know, Canadian Santa Claus or whatever it is, on Christmas Day, while I appreciate that, if I were there, predictably I'd be at the Animal Kingdom Lodge, but at the Animal Kingdom, but not because it's my favorite park, but because it's probably the only one that has some semblance of sanity on that day.
If you look at, and by no means is this the be all end all, touringplans.com. I have a subscription to it. I almost said prescription, but whatever. I have a subscription.
You need a prescription for it, not to it.
When I have the Disney blues, I look at it.
Right.
My prescription. Anyway, and you know, they obviously put everything on a scale of 1 to 10. I'm sure many of you who are listening know this. Magic Kingdom's a 10.
Right.
And it often closes to capacity on Christmas Day.
Of course.
Epcot's a 10. And Epcot does a better job of managing people They could, you know, it just feels better when there's tons of people in there, just it's so wide open and stuff. And
but it's more insane.
But it's insane.
Yeah.
Hollywood Studios is a 9. The Animal Kingdom is listed as a 5, which is very, very manageable. That's not bad at all. You can actually do stuff.
Absolutely. That's a normal, that's a normal, you know, slightly crowded day.
It's a fairly crowded day.
And it's because, like we were saying before, it doesn't beat you over the head with Christmas stuff.
Right.
So people don't think to go there on Christmas. They think to go to the other places. But if by the time you get to Christmas, you've been sufficiently beat over the head with Christmas stuff, this might be the place to go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And it has one added bonus, and that is it is open till 9 o'clock at night. And we have often said here on the show how wonderful the park is at night. So yeah. If you're there at Christmas, you'll be there for a good 4 hours in the dark. Ride Expedition Everest at night. Enjoy Dino Land at night, where it's beautiful. I mean, it's not Christmassy. It's not Osborne Family Lights. But it's a terrific place to be. And you'll be in a relatively good frame of mind. Enjoy rides and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
It's really a good spot.
And the other kind of added bonus, Mike, you mentioned this to me when we were talking about, you know, planning this this little segment. You know, oftentimes in the holidays, even though it's Florida, it can be pretty cold.
Right.
And that's often a benefit at the Animal Kingdom.
It can be. Yeah, it can. Because oftentimes, and people don't necessarily know this, but animals tend to be more active when it's colder. So the animal trails, the Kilimanjaro safaris, you might get a better show. If it's a little bit colder. The only drawback, I think, would be the Kali River Rapids. You probably wouldn't want to ride that if it's
sure,
cold.
Sure.
That's the only one. Everything else is pretty good, I think.
If you're there in a chilly day, like a cold day, and it's kind of close to the end, I would seriously recommend putting some time aside for especially the tiger exhibit at Maharaja.
Right.
Because you're really going to see them up and moving, especially if you're there towards sunset.
Mm-hmm.
In the cold, they're going to be really up and moving around. Would you say the same about the gorilla exhibit?
Gorillas, no, not as much as
the tigers, right?
Yeah, the tigers are more attuned, I think, to the cold. I mean, gorillas will be gorillas; they're not going to.
Okay.
And we said before, one thing I do recommend that you do if you're going to go to the Animal Kingdom, even if it's another day, but it's open till 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night. Take a look at the schedule, because you're going to want to know when the Maharaja and the Pangani closes. And one added benefit to that is when the Pangani closes, try to get to see the gorillas about 20 minutes before that, because the bachelor group, that's the one closest to the exit. It's on your left as you're walking out.
Right.
They're very, very active. They start running around, pounding their chests a lot of times as they're getting ready to go in for the night. It's a show.
Yeah.
So that's not necessarily cold related, but that's a show.
Right. The other thing that I would say about touring specifically on this day, Mike was talking about the park being open until 9 o'clock. So we were talking about, you know, maybe moving some of your attraction rides to later on. Also, usually they extend the live music offerings late in. And so that's something you could do as well. So if you're there, you've gone on Everest a couple of times, you know, head over to Harambe, grab yourself something at the Dawa bar, sit down and see, Buridika play or, you know, go over and see, you know, they're usually in Christmas, everybody is out and playing.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll have a lot of live entertainment. So check the schedule for that as well. They'll usually do a later showing of each of the shows as well. You know, those are inside, so if it's cold, you can get out of the cold a little bit there. But, I plan to have a normal day on a very abnormal time of year to be there.
And one thing you can do, and listen, I understand people, Christmas, they want that kind of Christmas experience.
Sure.
One thing you could do is go to Rope Drop Epcot, you know, or go see the World Showcase and go see some of those storyteller things and the Santas and all that kind of stuff, and then head to the Magic Kingdom the Animal Kingdom in the afternoon. It's not going to fill to capacity, so you don't have to worry about that like you do some of the other places.
Right.
And you'll still get 5-6 hours of, you know, a nice you know, getting some rides in and then just enjoying the atmosphere and being relatively quiet, getting away from the crowds.
Is there enough time maybe to hop over to one of the places at the Animal Kingdom Lodge for dinner and get back at, for the last 2 hours? You know, you can make yourself an early dinner at Boma or Jiko, hop over there, see the tree.
Absolutely. Why not do that? Why not
come back for the last 2 hours to do Everest or, you know?
Yep. It'd be great. It'd be a great night.
Anything else we want to mention about Christmas, Mike?
I don't think so. I think we covered everything.
Again, it's an easy topic for us because this is not an over-the-top Christmas-in-your-face place, which is what I like about it.
Which is what makes it so appealing for, I mean, for you as a tourist,
right,
to enjoy it there for that particular holiday. If you look at the touring plans, you know, the other days, it becomes much more... the Animal Kingdom gets a lot closer to the other parks. There's
right.
a lot of, you know, so there's a couple eights and sevens and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But like what we were talking about before, because they do very little for Christmas and people want that, you know, Santa Claus, Osborne Family Lights or whatever, the wishes at night or whatever.
Right.
Because it doesn't really do that, crowds don't tend to go there for Christmas Day. So it's a good time to go to the Animal Kingdom.
Absolutely, and the stuff about the cold and things that'll apply for the whole week,
and
rope drop is your friend when it comes to this week. I mean, you really got to take advantage of that. No matter what park you're going to, there's going to be a lot of people there. Christmas Day is an exception for the Animal Kingdom, but if you're going there, you know, on the 27th, you're going to be dealing with big crowds. So it's important to be prepared to attack this in the appropriate manner.
Exactly right.
All right. Well, thanks everybody again for listening to Radio Harambe. Visit our website, jomboeveryone.com. You'll find the internet's only guide to Disney's Animal Kingdom. We have reviews of attractions, restaurants, and shows, tons of photos, lots of information about animals and conservation as well. While you're there, we do ask that you visit our conservation page and see how we can all help save wildlife. You can find the both of us on Twitter. I am at Radio Harambe. Mike is at Jombo Everyone. We're also on Facebook and YouTube. Mike, you're on something else you've been meaning to mention. Is it Pinterest?
Oh, yeah. I started Pinterest, yeah.
So what is that?
Just look for Safari Mike on Pinterest and you'll find me.
Okay, easy enough.
We'll put a link on our website one of these days.
Easy enough. Yeah, we'll do it this week, hopefully. Let me remind you once again of our very limited sale of Radio Harambe t-shirts. They are available in large and extra large only. $24 includes shipping for most places in that price. Every bit of profit we make off these will be donated to our conservation partners. So go get yourself or somebody you love a great holiday gift and help us send a gift to those folks working every single day to save wildlife. If you're interested in one of these, go to our blog at jomboeveryone.com, or you can go straight to the blog at BuanaBlog, BWANA.blogspot.com, and you should be able to find a picture there in the coming days. You can also email me safariguide@jomboeveryone.com, and we'll make arrangements for that. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes. Rate us, leave us a review there. Helps to get the word out. You can also listen to us on Stitcher and on Podbean. So for Safari Mike, I am Dave McBride. Kwaharini, go well, and thank you for listening to Radio Harambe. Now, kumbu, now, utu, kupu, atamilele.